When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Gamers Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And this is episode 474, the 18th annual Golden Geek nominations. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. Hey friends, we are back. And again, as always, we're talking about the latest and greatest in tabletop gaming. And in particular, for this special episode, our feature is going to be the 18th annual Golden Geek nominations. People wearing tuxedos, people wearing fancy, crazy clothes, the dresses, the fashions, the celebrities, everyone's here. Look, everyone, look on the red carpet. It is him, Anthony Chatfield. He's here. Hey, Anthony, do you have anything to say about the 18th annual Golden Geek Awards?
How did I get here? Where am I? I was just in my office. Holy moly. Board games, man. There's nothing more glamorous in the world than board games. I know this because people tell me every single day that we live a dream.
It's true. It's a cardboard dream, but yes, nonetheless.
Cardboard dream. I love it.
Uh-huh.
Yep. So these are the awards. There's a lot of awards coming up. This is the first one that dropped. And if you look at last year, this is a different order. So I don't know what the Dice Tower people are doing. They're dragging their feet. Where are their nominations? Come on.
We got to get going here. So we're going to be taking a look at the top nominations. A lot of us, the general public, people on Board Game Geek, obviously, nominate all these fantastic games amongst an endless list from Board Game Geek. And I mean endless. Like, they have a drop-down menu that could choke a horse.
I hate nominating games for this award. It is exhausting, but, you know, it's worth doing. It's fun to do. It's just also terrible.
And then ironically, even with the nominations, it's like, did you nominate everybody? Because it seems like you nominate everybody.
Yes. Yeah. It's ridiculous. They have like 10, 12 nominations per category, and they have like 15 categories. It's like, it's too much.
Yeah. The only reason why we know they don't nominate everybody is because we were not nominated.
Yeah. Yeah. The heck, man.
Well, you know. We're the exception that proves the rule. I like that about us.
Yeah. We're special.
We got to remain anonymous.
That's true. We have a lot of listeners, but nobody knows who we are. It's that dichotomy. I love it.
It's the monkey paw thing when you start the podcast. You're like, Board Gamers Anonymous. That sounds like a great name. It's definitely not going to backfire on us. And they're like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All of you listening right now, I know who you are. You're like those hipsters. You're like, oh, I love this podcast, but I can't tell other people because then it'll become popular.
That's true.
And then it's not cool anymore.
It's very Fight Club.
Yeah.
Which I shouldn't even be talking about right now.
Yeah, what are you doing, man? You just broke the first rule.
All right. Well, that's going to be fun. And we'll talk about that in our future review because, again, it's talking about board games, which is the most important thing in the world to talk about. So let's talk about it. But Anthony, before we get into all that fun stuff, we're going to be doing some fun stuff, and we're going to be amongst the public, amongst people out there doing things, playing games and such.
Yeah, we love games. We like playing them. We like talking about them. We like doing all the stuff with them. Yeah, no, our next big thing, because I've actually gotten several emails and messages lately asking, like, what are you guys doing this summer? What conventions are you going to? And it's going to be a little bit of an atypical summer for us because our main focus is on the Board Game Academics Conference, which is taking place on July 4th as the first day of Dex Lite in Morristown, New Jersey. So we just actually sent out our acceptance letters to our many contributors for issue 2 and for the conference. So many, many amazing journal articles and topics that came through. And we'll be getting together and sharing those with the world on July 4th in Morristown. So if you want to play games with us, especially if you're local, Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, etc., hit us up there. That we'll be there for the full weekend. And very much looking forward to it. We're in the midst of planning as we speak.
Absolutely. So come for the academic conversation about tabletop gaming, and you could sign off on it being an educational event, and then just, you know, stay a couple extra days and just play games, because
that's what I'm doing. This is so
you know, that's generally how a lot of that stuff goes. So
yeah.
You're coming to a really hardcore, fun intellectual event, and you're leaving with a ton of experience of playing some great games and getting some great games to the table. Thanks, everybody, for sharing the call for papers. We got so many, as Anthony said, so many great papers that came in. And it's going to be a great time. We'll have more details as time goes on, including our keynote speaker and our special panel presentation. So stay with us. More details to come. All right. Well, that's a little bit what's going on with us. Anthony, anything going on with you?
Yeah, so we mentioned a couple weeks ago that we have recordings from Long Island Tabletop Expo, and they have not yet been finished, processed, whatevered, to put up on the Patreon. So those are still coming. But because I didn't want to continue the gap as we wait for those, I did record a bonus episode and post it to the Patreon just this last week, where I went through the most anticipated games for 2024 and kind of gave an update. I called it a mid-year update. I know it's not the middle of the year, but it's close enough. Mostly because I'm going to be out of town for many weeks over the summer. And it just kind of went through, like, what's come out, what has not come out, what is never coming out, what's good, what's not good. Some stuff's not very good. It happens. Where, like, people are like, you were anticipating this, right? I'm like, yeah, but I didn't know it was going to be bad. So
I was anticipating it being bad.
Yeah. So you can check that out. It's the bonus episode from last week. And that, again, those are available to anybody who supports us on the Patreon. So thank you all to everybody who does that. And you can listen to that. You can leave comments. You can let us know what you would like to hear. And again, coming up very soon, hopefully, we will have our recordings of Level Up Your Tabletop Teach and Level Up Your Mental Health, our 2 hour-long presentations from Long Island Tabletop Expo. They were amazing. They were great. Lots of great content in those presentations, and a lot of really cool feedback and interaction from the audience there. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, as we wait for those, we'll have other bonus content for you as well.
Excellent. All right. So that's what's going on with us. Anthony, what's going on with all our friends out there? What's our question of the week?
All righty, folks. Question of the week this week is, what is a game for which the retail edition is just as good as the crowdfunded version, or close enough?
Ooh.
So let's talk about games that didn't need to be crowdfunded. Which, on the list gets longer every year. So Ryan over on the Patreon says Garphill Games. This is Shem Phillips and, you know, West Kingdom, or East Kingdom, whatever.
It's all the kingdoms. It's all
Architects, Paladins. All those games, and that, which is 100% true. These games are basically the same thing. And if you wait, you get it for cheaper because it's in retail and you're not paying the shipping. Like,
yes,
typically the difference is like the promo, like maybe some promo cards if you care about that kind of stuff. So you get a little bit earlier and you get a promo and that's it. There's not like a bunch of extra stuff packed on, which is cool. I like when crowdfunding campaigns do that. Over on the Facebook, we had a few more answers. Jesse says, I forewent the fancy version of Ready, Set, Bet for the retail version and felt it was as much as the game needed to be. Matthew says every single tiny Epic game.
True. Very true.
Yeah, pretty much. Kelber says games in the South Tigers trilogy. Again, that's Garpil. As well as Reiner Knizia games, which is generally true. Because what would the stretch goal be for a Reiner Knizia game? More abstract pieces? Like
more math.
Yeah, more math.
more embedded math in there.
Now with more math. We get Nathan says Spirit Island, Nature Incarnate, exactly the same and faster to retail for some backers. Brandon says Thunder Road Vendetta was very close. Mm-hmm. So there are a bunch of these now. Some companies really just use Kickstarter as pre-order service.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm okay with it. Sometimes I'm not. I generally buy every flat out game. So that's like Calico and Cascadia and Verdant. I think I've only backed one of those games on Kickstarter, which is the most recent one, Nocturne. Because they're basically the same. Like, you get the same stuff if you wait and pick it up at the convention from AEG or if you buy it off Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And they're small enough that the price is more or less the same and you're not paying for shipping. So I'm like, I'll wait the extra 3 months. I've never backed a Garpil game. I think it's a good pick, and I own like five of them. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good pick as well. The big ones are always tough because I know a couple people are like, oh yeah, Simon this and Simon that. I'm like, I know we all dislike what Simon does and it's very manipulative, but they're not the same. Right. Yeah. That's the whole point. That's why it's manipulative. It's not the same. If you back it on Kickstarter or GameFound now, you're getting a bunch more stuff. Mm-hmm. They're apparently charging you for that stuff now. As sure. We just saw with God of War, where they have to pay for a higher pledge level to get the stretch goals. But
jeez.
It's so stupid. I think it's... you know what's going to happen there? Some people are not going to have realized that because they've backed other CMON projects. Yes. And they're going to be mad. It's going to show up. Be like, this is just the retail version and I paid $40 for shipping. What the heck?
All the campaign pages are way too long.
Yeah.
I used to do a Kickstarter kind of podcast talking about a lot of these campaigns not having enough information. Now it's a waterfall. It's just an endless waterfall. It's like you have to scroll down infinitely to kind of get to the sense of what that is. And by the time you get to the bottom, you forgot what was on top. You're just like, what was this again? What game was I backing? I'm not really sure.
Yeah. Well, what they're going for is that you're in your brain, you're saying, that's a lot.
100%.
Well, I guess I want that because that's a lot.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the big perpetrators, and I guess this is probably more on your side, Anthony, is Castles of Burgundy, right?
Yes, yes. That... Roman on Facebook actually mentioned this as well.
Oh, so. Nice. There you go. Yeah, I would say for myself, the one that sticks with me to this day is Castles of Mad King Ludwig, the collector's edition, with the gigantic tiles, which I've never seen in person. And I've yet to see pictures of on the table because they were supersized or colossalized as their version. You didn't need to do that. It's supposed to be an architectural plan. You should be able to put it on the table. Like,
yeah,
I don't know why Ted Allspach thought that was a thing he needed to do. I mean, money. Sure.
Right. It's money, but they know that it was a bad idea because they will not show anybody what it looks like.
It's true. People have been crushed by much less than that, so yeah.
Yeah, it's like those bookshelves, they have to be like attached to the wall or they'll crush a child.
100%.
Your copy of Castle being Mad King Ludwig is like attached to the wall.
Yeah, here's the wall anchors for your game. Like, why? Like, yeah, you know why it is. Like, damn it.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's what's going on with everyone out there. Please hit us up on all the social medias while they're still there. Cause we're there and we love to hear from you there. Or again, you can always find all of our thares on BoardGamerAnonymous.com. It has all of our great content, all of our podcast reviews, everything, all the archives and stuff like that, plus all of the social media links and stuff. Hit us up. We'd love to hear from you. All right. So that's everything that everyone's doing out there. So Anthony, let's get to the important part. Let's talk about some acquisition disorders.
All right. So I had something else, but then I was looking at GameFound and I realized that there's two games on there right now at the same time.
There's a lot of games, yeah.
From the same designer.
Uh-huh.
And you know what? By the time we publish this, these games won't be up anymore, but who cares? This is funny, and I don't care. and honestly, everything can be late backed now, so it doesn't even matter when it ends. Like, it's silly. But we have Mindbug Battlefruits, which is... we talked about Mindbug back in August, September. Chris and I, you played it at the Indianapolis airport.
I did. It's the best place to play it.
Yeah, it was good. And it's basically like an 18 card deck, two player battling game from Richard Garfield, right? They have since now run three separate crowdfunding campaigns for additional content. I backed the second one, so I have three boxes of these now, which is plenty. Unless you play it a lot. But it's great. It's a lot of fun. It's quick. It's very easy to teach. It's super accessible. If you lose and have a bad hand or a bad draw or a bad deck, the game takes 10 minutes. You just start over, which is fun. The other game is Keyforge Ember Skies, also designed by Richard Garfield. So these two games, the two most recent Richard Garfield games, both on GameFound at the same time. They're ending within 2 days of each other. And now, number of backers and then the total value of the Kickstarter, of the GameFound campaigns. Chris, which one do you think has more backers? And I'm not really going through Keyforge because I've talked about this a billion times. It's Keyforge.
It's Keyforge.
which of these two campaigns do you think has more people backing it?
Oh, come on. I mean, got to be Keyforge?
It's not even close.
Oh.
Mindbug has 4,000 backers. Keyforge only has 1,170.
What happened to Keyforge? It was like the thing. Like it was I have a deck. I don't even want to play it, and I have a deck.
You know what it is? Keyforge is not the type of game that should be on GameFound for every campaign. This is the third one they've run.
Yeah,
and the first one I backed, and I gave them a lot of money up front. They sent me a bunch of stuff. They messed up a bunch of other stuff that I never got replaced because I needed pictures of it, which was annoying. But whatever, it all showed up. The game is really, like, it needs the organized play element. It needs people to go to the game stores and play it. And I'm not seeing that. Not locally, anyways.
Sure.
A little bit at conventions. They've run some events, but it's everybody thought it was coming back with that new set that they did like a year and a half ago. And it didn't really come back. It's really just living on through GameFound. And so the number of people who are in on that is pretty small.
Yeah.
The campaign that I backed, I think, had like 4,000 or 5,000 backers and made over $1 million. Mindbug is like plays with your kids, man.
Yeah.
It's super simple. You play with anybody. It's cute. It's fun. It's fun to have new stuff. You get new decks. It's great. So Mindbug is stomping on Keyforge in terms of backers.
Crazy.
The total value is about the same. Mindbug's at like 400,000 euros and Keyforge is at like $325,000. Not too far off. But that's just because on these Keyforge campaigns, you can back for a billion different things, right? You can get the cards, obviously, but you can also get ones with your own name on them.
Sure.
I have one from that first campaign that they ran. You can have like new two-player sets. You have tokens. You have player mats. You have like little plastic pieces.
Sure.
They did not do like the plushies and other weird stuff this time around, or like the little plastic statues. But there's like the highest level backing for this is $2,000, and 10 people did it. So. That is crazy. But, you know, it's interesting to see it because right now we're seeing like a huge surge in CCGs and collectible card games. Neither one of these is that. These are the grandfather of all collectible card games. Richard Garfield coming back and saying, well, here's two different ways we could do that are not collectible.
Yes.
What do you think of these? And this is what people think of these. So I will potentially back the Mindbug one now that I'm looking at it. I will definitely not back the Keyforge one because I have so many Keyforge decks and there's nowhere to go to play them.
Oh.
So I still have like my box of new ones from a year ago that I haven't even opened because there's no one to play that with except my son, but he'd rather play Star Wars Unlimited, which fair, better game.
Sure.
So there you have it, folks. If you want some Richard Garfield stuff, maybe the late backing's up, maybe not, either way. Both of these will run another campaign probably 9 months from now, because that seems to be what they're doing. So we got Mindbug, Battlefruits, Keyforge, Ember Skies, both on GameFound. It's funny, but also interesting, but also weird.
Yeah. I mean, like, pour one out for your homies. I mean, this is a tragedy a little bit. And I wish there was some major journalistic or coverage of this, or some deep, you know, academic dive into it, because I had this conversation with Game Master Dave, and without going into like a whole diatribe here, we lost a lot of game stores, like, clearly, yeah. Right? We lost them because of Kickstarter early on, and then we lost them because of COVID, and game stores have struggled just generally, and obviously online sales and stuff like that too, and Amazon, of course. I mean, there's been a couple of articles here and there over the last five some odd years, and there's been some attempts. Barnes & Noble tried at one point to put together some game days and stuff like that, but like, I don't know. Like, I don't know about the state of the industry when you have these very brilliant games, wonderful designers, and yet at the same time, you have to look at these things now and go, will I ever find a place to play these things? Like, they're not going to have organized plays. Like, think of all these miniature games, the Star Wars miniature games or the Flight Path miniature games. Like, where am I playing these? I haven't seen these played unless you and your friends arrange a time and a place to play them. It's just,
right.
It was, again, back in the day, not to keep going back there, but there was a time when every store was running a miniatures, this, that, or the other, or this, that, or the car. Now it's just, it's, you know, it's oversaturated and there's very few opportunities. I think even at one point they were talking about libraries getting Magic tournaments and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That never really played out. I think we reported on that a couple of years back and it's never manifested. So I don't know. I'd like to know if someone's doing something about this, because it seems to be a serious issue.
Right. Like, there's so much money in these things. Like, yeah. If you lose the baseline, the places to play them, what is a Wizards of the Coast going to do? Like, and honestly, it seems like they know that, because the Magic the Gathering business model has shifted away from, here's our new sets, here's our big tournaments, which obviously still exist.
Yeah.
But they have all these, like, secret lair drops and, like, their little crossover events. Like, here's Doctor Who, and here's Fallout, yeah. And here's Lord of the Rings. And it's really just for collectors. But yeah, I look back at the Keyforge data. The first campaign, which was Winds of Exchange, which I did back, had 6,100 backers. And that was everybody being excited that it was back. Mm-hmm. The second one, which was last year, Grim Reminders, had 2,200 backers. And then this one right now only has 1,100 with 3 days left. So wow. it's like a half life. It's going down by half each time.
Wow.
I don't know how much money they need to survive and keep persisting and build. But even if you go to their website under, you know, retail events, they say we're going to start supporting in-store play kits as if they haven't done it yet.
Sure. Like,
and they have pre-release kits for Grim Reminders. All I can say is that no store near me did this. I couldn't find any. It was like March 2024. That's when Star Wars Unlimited came out. Lorcana's hot. Like, how much space do you even have? So, I don't know. It's sad. I loved Keyforge. It's the only game I went to a store for organized play multiple weeks in a row. Like, sure. I met a lot of friends that way in Pittsburgh. Like, it was a blast. I did this for like 3-4 months. And everything just kind of died down when it fell apart. So, you know, bye, Keyforge. I loved you. Star Wars is good, but it's Star Wars.
It's Star Wars.
And Mindbug is Mindbug. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, and Lorcana is a thing. And I don't know. So. Oh, well.
Yeah. It is what it is. What are you going to do? Like, things die. But it's one of those things you can look at it and see why it happened. You're just like, well, if this could have just been different, it would have been better. But oh, yeah. Well, things happen.
Well, again, like, these are, and again, it's the card games, it's the miniature games, it's even the tabletop board games too, that you want to be able to have those competitions and experience. You have to have those experiences with large groups of people and tournament kind of kits and organized play. And it just, I don't know what the solution is for that. But hopefully someone's thinking about it and we could talk about it more, because there needs to be a solution to it. Because these games are too good. And again, they sit in our closets. That's
yeah, they do.
Yeah. All right. Well, I got a bunch and I had to hold myself back because there was a bunch more on here. So let's start with surprising. And I just want to surprise Anthony out of the box here. Anthony, do you know a game called Munchkin?
Oh, I know what this is. Boo. Boo already, I say.
Munchkin, the big box. It's on Backer Kit. And I think, obviously, clearly, they're taking advantage of D&D's 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
The box itself has the iconic photo there with the dragon. And finally, they brought John Kovalec back to do the artwork, which is... Again, there's a lot of good artwork, but it's iconic for the game, and it's honestly one of, if not the main reason why I even liked Munchkin to start with.
I honestly didn't know anybody else did artwork. When I think of Munchkin, I think of Kovalec.
Yeah. 100%. And then they had a whole bunch of, like, they tried out a bunch of different artists just for, like, one-offs, and then, like, a lot of the sets since then have been just different artists across the board.
It's literally the only thing I like about that game. Why would you get rid?
I don't know.
All Kovalec all day.
I don't. It's really odd. It doesn't make a lot of sense. What was surprising, and I'll talk about the campaign, is they still have 13 days left at the time of the recording, and they are already up to $842,000 plus so forth and so on.
Oh my gosh!
So I was like, I was seeing this. I'm like, Anthony's going to be surprised because. What really comes in this gigantic box, which holds a lot of things, is really just the quintessential Munchkin game. It's the core base set that's been around forever, and a couple of the expansions, and then, you know, some additional pieces and the boards and stuff like that. So there's nothing radically new here. Like, this is... If you've never played Munchkin, this is a fantastic opportunity to get all the things all at once. Plus, you know, if you've ever followed Munchkin or liked Munchkin, they always overproduce like endless numbers of additional, I don't know, swag that goes along with the game. So buttons and dice and stickers and trackers and standees and things and bookmarks to the ends of the earth. So it's a lot of stuff. It's cool. It's all the stuff you have if you follow Munchkin. There is some relatively kind of stuff. There's some wooden meeples, which is cool. There's, obviously, I mentioned that one piece of artwork. It's, you can get in a dice tray, a patch. There's some cards and some, you know, minor things that you've never seen before, I guess, more or less, depending on how, like, you're into it. So, yeah, it's a thing, man. It's making money. It's doing things. I'm surprised, but yeah. Munchkin.
All right. Okay. Why? Who spent $125 for just Munchkin in like five expansions?
I mean,
it's a cool cover. It is a very cool cover. It's a very cool cover.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's the AD&D John Kovalec style. Yeah, that's cool.
I mean, again, I think it's, if you play the game, you might want a couple of these upgraded pieces or the stuff that you can add on. And then you're like, why not? I should just buy a box. They have giant boxes for Munchkin. So you could store all your Munchkin stuff. It was a big thing about, I would say, about 4 years ago. I have one of the boxes now. It was on like major discount because I have so much Munchkin stuff. Yeah. So it's there if you're so interested. But yeah, it's a little pricey. But Munchkin stuff has always been pricey. It's always been around that price, give or take. All right. Another great campaign that's up is one of our games of the year, Feudum. Feudum, we had talked about this a little while back, that it was coming to GameFound, and it's out. It's their 7th year anniversary. They have decided to blow Anthony's mind by making a 6-player play this game.
Why?
Because it's one of the greatest games of all time. But
is it with 6 people, though?
Well, I will say one of the things about Feudum, and really the thing that I love about Feudum, is you have the different guilds and other things. I mean, as far as it, you have 6 different action spaces where things happen. And typically, as the game goes on, you typically control one or two or multiples of these throughout the game. what's great about the game is when one thing happens, all the other ones, more or less, depending on where they're at as far as resources are concerned, are also triggered. So you get to see a cascading effect throughout all these different areas on the board, which is a lot of fun. There are six areas on the board. So I guess you could now, each person could control one area. Like, you're not left out of an area. So that's pretty cool. And they have upgrades and, you know, fun little stuff. So if you have not played or purchased a game, you should. You should definitely play it. Because I know that it's a game that it takes some time to fall in love with, because it is a super, super crunchy game. But it's the beautiful oddity of it that I think draws the attention. So
it is very odd. I've held on to it for many years, despite never actually getting it played.
I got it next time I come in there as we're playing it. But we have to. We're going to get a review copy for the six player, so maybe we get six players. Maybe.
I don't want to do that.
You might want to. You'll see. All right.
I do want to play it. It looks very cool. That's why I've held on to it. The aesthetic is astoundingly cool.
Yes.
Like, I might even upgrade my copy despite never having played it, because you get the little metal dude.
Yes.
And I want the metal dude.
100%. It's very Alice in Wonderland if it was done by Monty Python.
Yeah.
Kind of deal. Yeah. So, I love that. It's really, it's Euro-y. Like, it's Euro-y through and through. And I think if you love that kind of, like, deep dive into Euro-ness, then you're on board. The opposite side here, Kickstarter, Fractured Sky, Rift. I'll actually be talking about Fractured Sky at the table, so hang on for a second. But since this is a section for acquisition disorders, Fractured Sky, Rift, it's on Kickstarter. There's a couple days left. And basically, this expansion is a small box expansion. It's got painted minis, magnets, and a couple of other little things. Basically, this campaign is about, hey, would you like to buy the game? It's now on crowdfunding again. You can buy it. The expansion itself is, again, rather small, because basically, without explaining the whole game, it's all about collecting these different star pieces that have fallen to the board. And this new expansion allows you to do some set collection, because now, instead of just being one color and you're collecting the pieces, now you could collect certain sets that are going to score you exponentially more points. So that's pretty much it. There's an upgraded version where there's metal pieces and of the same thing, but it's a small box expansion. So if you already love Fractured Sky, or if you do not know, I'll talk about it in a second. It's currently on, you know, a little thing called Kickstarter, and the expansion itself is $19, which is also, you know, relatively inexpensive, unless you want to go a little more fancy. Metal edition is $29, and then you could buy the full version of it, which is $129. So then we get some some heavy swinging area there. And then finally, again, just because it's another big box, Canvas, the game about sleeving cards of art to make beautiful works of art or weird, wacky arts, and also matching symbols. Well, they had the base game and then two expansions. You can fit everything into these three boxes. It is difficult. I've done it many times. It's difficult. But now they've said, hey, why don't we just create a giant box where you could fit all three, the base game and the two expansions in, and it's done. You can actually be able to do that without having problems. And the trays come out, so you can actually put all the components and pieces and tokens and cards in there, and then pull them out onto the actual table to play with them, which is really the smartest way to do a big box. So many times the big box is just a big box. This is a big box where you can actually use it for actual, you know, game holders and component holders at the table. It's a little bit on the expensive side. It's going to cost you $34 for a box. But again, they do have trays and stuff like that. There's also a couple of new cards and new things for $10 more. And then, of course, you could back all the previous campaigns if you're interested. Canvas is a good game. It's definitely on the super light style. It's definitely more on the family style. My family enjoys it because you can play it for the points, matching symbols and stuff, or you can play it for, you know, creating the most elaborate, beautiful pictures and voting on that. All right, now let's get on tour at the table. And we'll let you know if those games are buy and you should run out and purchase those games. If those games are play and you should sit down and play them. If those games are dodge and you should avoid them. Or if, in fact, those games are the dreaded burn and they do not deserve a place in your collection, whether or not they're placed in a gigantic additional box. So, Anthony, I got a chance to play two games this week. First up is a game from Board and Dice. This is called Books of Time. It's a simple and fast-playing, innovative twist on tableau building and set collection. At least that's what it says. this is a really interesting game to talk about. And I think it's also interesting to talk about Board and Dice because at some point, sometime in the company, someone came in there and threw down a gauntlet and was like, hey, you did all the T games. Can we do something else? Like, what else you guys got? Because we've done the T stuff already. And obviously, Barcelona. Very nice. Very cool. Awesome. Beautiful. Fantastic game. We've talked about it a lot. And this is another really interesting, different take on a tabletop game. So as they describe it, it's an innovative twist on tableau building and set collection. What that means is you are actually going to be creating three books. And when I mean you're creating three books, the game itself comes with two ring metal binders from like back in the day when you were a kid, where you had to pull them apart and then hopefully not lose your finger when they snap back together. So you have a red, you have a green, and you have a gold book. And basically, you are putting down these books of all the different accomplishments and all the different travels and all the different scientific discoveries and art and culture that humanity has done over, you know, 1,000 years. You're trying to put all these together in the book. That's pretty much it. There really isn't much to the story here. It's like thousands of years of history in books. It's your chance to, you know, write the story. So as far as thematics are, you know, concerned, that's it. It's the pages of the books that you're going to put into the books. You know, some have historical figures. Some have different geographic locations. Some have references to scientific discoveries. But generally, it is all about the mechanics. This is a mechanics Euro game dry. As almost as dry as can be, not necessarily a bad thing, and also, like, as I said earlier, kind of themeless, right? It's really nice to see that they added a lot of these fantastic inventors and artists and so-and-so and so forth, but again, most of the information about these people are in the rule book, and they're not even named on the card, so really, what it comes down to is, what are the symbols on the cards doing as far as putting them in the book? So let me talk about the actual gameplay itself. So when you're sitting at the table, as I mentioned, you have these three books. So you have these metal binders. Again, really interesting, dynamic kind of concept, real metal. And you put the cover and the back on it. And you start with two pages in each book that give you bonuses and benefits. And then there's a market. There is an area in which you will be able to take cards from, put it in your own kind of market building area, which then you will purchase from that area to add it to your book. Why would you do that? Good question. Now, the reason to do that is, as I mentioned earlier, this is a dry, multiplayer solitaire Euro game that's all about the symbology and about, you know, chaining together a couple of different effects. Now, there are a lot of actions in this game that you can take. So as you're putting the book together, you're doing so to actually kind of, like, you're building a book thematically, but really what you're building is a tableau in which you're choosing when to activate. So, activating pages is the main action which you're going to do, which allows you to pick one of your three books and allows you to utilize the action on both pages, the left page and the right page. You can utilize them in either order, and I'll talk about the Chronicle in a minute. And that's going to allow you to trade resources. There are pen tips and pages because, of course, you're writing books. There's also files, which act as a wild resource, but also files are important for some of the exchange of resources. And then it also allows you some special abilities to get more, not just these resources, but get more pages in which then you can pay using pen tips and pages to add to your to one of your three books. Now, actually adding the pages in will give you sometimes a, you know, an additional resource. So you're always getting resources to gain. The resources management's pretty low. Like I said, there's basically three resources or two if you count the wild resource as its own thing. And as you add pages, you're getting those basic resources, then you're activating those pages. And then at some point, as you're flipping through these pages, you're going to come to the end of the book and then close the book. At this point, it allows you to go back to the beginning of the book and then have access to those original special abilities early on. But you can also close the book. You put a bookmark in just to kind of hold things, and then you can utilize the resources from the previous pages, which is closing the book as an action, not as in, I have finished through all the pages and therefore it closes. Finally, you'll get to draw cards, which allows you to have more options to put into your books again. And then there is a chronicle. There is a cardboard stand in which you put this brown book that is supposed to be representative of the Chronicle of Humanity. And basically what it comes down to is 15 cards which you randomly select from a brown deck in order to set up an additional free action that you can do each turn in any order that you'd like. And then once everyone does that action, the card flips and basically it becomes the turn tracker. As I mentioned before, there's a lot of great historical figures mentioned in the rulebook. Again, it's kind of sad that they're not actually somewhere kind of noted in the cards. I remember when we played Her Story, it was really fun to get the name of this wonderful woman and her accomplishments and then have a full kind of description of the things that she did. Here it's like you kind of recognize that person or maybe check the rulebook. Again, there's also industry cards. It's fine. They don't really have any kind of special like orders, like ordering them in a certain order so that like the technology kind of advances. And, you know, that's primarily it. So throughout the game, you are getting resources to get pages, to add pages to your book, or I'm sorry, your multiple books, your three books. And then as you choose to do so, you activate two pages on the books. You flip those pages over because now those opportunities are passed. Eventually, those opportunities come back. And then you're doing all of this for two reasons. One is there is a track that you're moving up your three different book colors. So there's a red, a green, and a gold. And as you move up, you get, you know, special activities. You get additional resources. And it also will score how many pages you've added to whatever particular book it might be. On the top, that's kind of like the big hit that you'll be able to get at the end of the game. Beyond those points, you can also get points from achievements. At the start of the game, this is kind of interesting. You are given green, red, and gold again achievements. They are reflective of what you're able to do in your book, what kind of icons you're able to get. So green is about all different icons that you can get in your book. Red is about certain science books and then a variety of different symbols. And then gold is all about having the right order of symbols. Okay? as you get those, or as you get special abilities, you can knock off one of the three tiles that are stacked on top of each other. So the green, the red, and the gold all have three tiles. You can knock them off, and then at the end of the game, hopefully, you knock them off to the point where you can score the biggest reward possible as long as you meet the condition of that achievement. So maybe if you're not pushing the gold book, you don't want to go down to the highest level of achievement because it's just not a really well-developed book. So you still want to score 5 points out of it. But, you know, if you could do everything on that gold book, it scores you 24. So, I mean, honestly, that's it in a nutshell. Beyond, I will say one thing. I mentioned that this is multiplayer solitaire. It also has a solo mode. I don't know. You might know the guy's name by David Turchi. He does some solo games. And basically, the exact thing you do in the multiplayer game, you're doing in the solo game. With the exception of you're trying to meet certain achievements that you decide on before the game starts. So the solo game is almost identical to the multiplayer game. The game itself is pretty easy to manage, although there is a lot of choices of actions to take. There can be some analysis paralysis, because if you are playing with a large group of people, basically everyone's looking at the cards or the pages that you could put in your books. Obviously, people are going to take them as time goes on. So basically, you're waiting to your turn to see what's available in the market for you to take. But basically, it's multiplayer solitaire. I have found it plays best at two if you have to play multiplayer. I will say I have played this multiplayer at different player counts, and I've also played it solo. The game plays best solo. I'm not a solo gamer, but I would play this game solo because it's fun to work at the mechanical, you know, puzzle and formula that you're trying to do here. But as a multiplayer game, it's I would say rather, if not tremendously slow, just because there are so many actions to take. You have three different books to build from, and everyone's trying to decide on what cards really work for them or don't. So, Books of Time, it's fine. It's a good solo game. It's a challenging multiplayer game because of the time and the AP for it. So it gets a play for me.
All right. I couldn't tell where that was leading. I was like, he likes it. He doesn't.
I like it at one best, two works, one or two players. I wouldn't play this with three or four players. It has components for three or four players. I wouldn't do that just because when I did try to play it with three or four players, it just grinded. And since it doesn't have any kind of like, you know, thematic flow as far as like humanity's growing and now you're getting a second age of cards and a third age of cards, like I'm not building towards anything specifically, you know, wonderful. I'm just getting another card. So I wish it had a more thematic kind of scope to it and flow to it. But as a dry multiplayer solitaire game, all of these are not negatives. It's a fine game. All right. Now, on the complete opposite side of that is Fractured Sky. I talked about this earlier with the Kickstarter, that you'll be able to pick extra pieces up for it. Well, Fractured Sky is a deduction game, and it's all about this magical fantasy world in which you are trying to collect all of these different star pieces that have fallen to your magical world. And it turns out there is a gigantic magical creature that's down there who is not happy about this. But this magical creature has decided that whomever is able to collect the most of these different star pieces will get a magical wish. Now, very high level cartoony fantasy to kind of set the stage, because the artwork in this game and the components in the game really are all about it. it pops with fantasy, it pops with color. It's really super dynamic as far as that's concerned. Like, the pieces are top notch, kind of expensive as far as like the deluxe version is concerned. I think it's $125, and I think the super deluxe version, I think, is $180 something or another. You could check that for me. But basically, what you're doing is fairly simple. You have a whole bunch of different airships. What's fun about the game is the production, because you have this giant board with all your stuff, and these airships are trying to allow you to do area control on different areas of the map, because different areas of the map will get the starfalls, you know, randomly assigned to them based upon the cards and the objectives in the game. So you are building out the area utilizing these airships that are these wonderful little plastic, I don't know, not necessarily spaceships, but I guess they're basically just airships. So kind of cartoony, wonderful fantasy ships. And they magnetically connect to numbers. Now, the numbers in the game are the power in the game. And based on what you decide to take your three different airships and magnetically connect to, you're able to put the ship somewhere out there on the board on a location in hopes of getting one of these starfall pieces. Whoever has the most starfall pieces at the end of the game wins, because they get a gigantic wish, which I guess is about winning. So, what limits you, because there is power from zero, a double zero, there's a zero, there's another zero, all the way up to 10, is you can only put 10 power on the board. If you put more, there's a penalty that then reduces each of the power that you're putting out there. So it's an area control game, but since the numbers are magnetically connected to your ships, it's hidden. So I'm going to put a ship out there in the careening cliffs, but Anthony has no idea if it's a 5 or a 6 or a 7. He doesn't know what level of power I have there. Now, there's also a power 10, which is super powerful, obviously. And there's also a power 1. Those have a special color on their own. So it does give away a little information, but you could trick people. You could be, oh, that's a 10, or it's a 1. I'm not really too sure. But basically, you're putting your three ships out there to control areas in order to claim those different pieces. In addition to all that fun stuff, you could build fortresses. These are these little fortress pieces that give control points to these different areas. Gives a +1 to all the areas that they're connected to. There's also markets. Markets allow you to gain an additional resource from those particular areas. And then there's skimmers, which are like little tiny airships that give you an additional troop power to that particular area. Now, you might ask yourself, great, there's a whole bunch of areas in which I could put power and control, but how do I know where to do that? Well, at the start of the game, there's going to be an open public location that everyone knows is going to get a starfall. Then there is a private hidden one, which you can pay 2 gold to see for yourself and then get additional resources from. So you could actually sneak a peek if you pay for it, but as you pay for it and you get that for yourself, other people are going to know that you're going somewhere on purpose and maybe join you or kind of mess with you a little bit. So you could fake people out as well. There's also objectives in the game. Objectives in the game will also give you a starfall piece if you meet the particular objectives, and typically that's about what you place out there on the board, not necessarily what area you control. And basically, you play that over 5 different rounds in which you put out all these additional pieces. You try to control the areas with the most possible starfalls with as much power as possible. And at the end of the game, whoever has the most starfall pieces wins the game, gets the wish. And it's a beautiful, colorful, hidden power area control game with some deduction. And it's all about trying to figure out what other people are thinking and where they're placing their power, so that you don't waste your power at a certain location and you try to trick them at the same time. So it is the opposite of multiplayer solitaire. It's all about group play, not heavy on the mechanics, a very light game. I played this with my family, and it played kind of well. It was kind of easily understandable, and the production is, like, extremely high. Like, way too high than what the game needed. Like, we were talking about earlier games that are overproduced. This is overproduced, but again, considering that it is not super crunchy or anything, and it's all about the pieces on the board and the things that you move and the wonderful magnetic pieces, it kind of deserves to be. So for Fractured Sky, I'm going to give it a buy.
Nice. Yeah, it looks really cool with the Kickstarter campaign, especially with the new stuff that they have up there.
Yeah, they really went all out there. So if you're looking for a fun game to play with a bunch of people of all different levels and ages, this definitely works. All right, so that's everything gaming got to the table. Anthony, let's get on to our feature review. Our feature review, of course, is talking about the latest and greatest, which is the 18th annual Golden Geek nominations. Anthony, take it away.
Alrighty, folks. So we already kind of went through what we thought these should be a few weeks back. So this time what we're going to do is we're going to go through the actual nominations and just kind of briefly run through what's up for it, what we think, what we would pick, all that good stuff. There are games in here that we have not played. There are games in here that we have not heard of. So I can see a couple just looking down the list. We'll not talk about those. Well, I will certainly list them as I read them off, but we're not going to pretend that we know what the British way counterinsurgency at the end of Empire is.
Aww.
I know.
I mean, didn't you just get a tattoo of that?
Yeah, you know, it looks... it's a coin game, so, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's good, but no, thank you.
You're down the coin.
Yeah, it's all good. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're going to start off with the two-player games. We're just going to go down the order of the list that's on Board Game Geek. If you go to their homepage, you can click on it. 18th annual nominations. Two-player games. First up, we have Boo.
Nice, you did it right.
Yeah, I did it. That's all four O's. I think. Yeah. The aforementioned British Way counterinsurgency at the end of Empire, new coin game.
How many O's does that have?
Two.
All right, so it's definitely not as good as Boob. So
there, yeah. Oh, that's okay. There we go. We'll just measure by O's.
I mean, why? What else is there?
Disney Lorcana only has one O.
Oh, sorry, Disney.
No good. Dracula versus Helsing.
Uh huh.
No O's.
Well, O negative blood, you know.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, okay. There you go. Or is that a negative O?
Oh, there you go.
So less than zero. O's. There you go. I don't know. Lacuna. Yep. Lacuna.
No. O's there.
Oranienburger Canal, which is a great little game that I've only played solo, mm-hmm. From Uwe Rosenberg. Sail, a two-player cooperative trick-taking game. Mm-hmm. From All Play.
Yep.
Sky Team, another two-player cooperative game about landing airplanes. Mm. No O's. So few O's. Star Wars, the deck-building game, which we have talked about, like, very much.
Yes.
And Undaunted Battle of Britain.
Yay.
There's almost zero O's anywhere. Aww. In here. I guess it's Boo.
I mean, it certainly can be. I mean, as far as two-player games are concerned, I mean, again, the BGG list is difficult to manage because it doesn't necessarily state in the dropdown as far as like right. Which are two-player games, so people are just nominating things. Obviously, this seems to be a decent filtered list of that. So
these are almost all two-player only, so they did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, again, Boop definitely makes sense as far as a two-player game is concerned, which... pretty dynamic and interesting. I know Disney Lorcana is a two-player game. I just never think of a CCG as a two-player game, and obviously there always are. So right. It's just like, it seems too big to be a two-player game. It just doesn't feel like a two-player. Sky Team has gotten a lot of attention. Like, right. People are a really big fan of it. And Star Wars, the deck builder game, was like the second coming until they decided to do a CCG. And so... probably won't see more content for that.
Which is, yes. So sad.
And Undaunted Battle of Britain is also very good, because I've played those as well.
Very good games throughout here, yeah. I would pick either Oranienburger or Star Wars, but there's several games here I'd be happy with.
Yeah. I I'm not kidding about that. I think if Disney Arcana wins that, I think that's kind of sad, because I just think that they're in a different, they're, you know, they're different, all just a different game. Like, it's just different. Yeah. I mean, Star Wars, the deck building game, is meant, like, it's built, the box itself is everything as far as a two-player game is concerned. So, yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm going to go with that, because Star Wars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very good. Very good game. All right, so that's two-player games. Next up, we have artwork and presentation. So these are all games we've heard of, at least. So that's a plus.
I've played most of these.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Apiary. I think this is a joke, but this is everybody's joke pick. I think Apiary looks nice for what it is, but it's a silly theme. And honestly, some of the artwork's buried because of the iconography and graphic design.
They did the best they could with that concept.
True. The artist did a very good job.
Because that,
you know, imagine that phone call. Jamie calls up the artist and they're like, this is what we're going to do. We have this great new game. It's got some vibes, like, you know, worker placement, a little bit of Wingspan vibes. Like, okay, cool. It's about bees. Oh, I like drawing bees. They're in space. Okay. Bees in space. Got it.
Yeah. It's a little, when you first look at it, it's a little disconcerting, but it could have went really bad easily.
It could have gone really bad. That's true. Oh man, Apiary. I feel like that game would have been at the top of everybody's list for last year. It was very good, and just the theme was so weird.
I just want to say one thing before we get too deep in this. Like, artwork and presentation, and I get it, it's two different things. Like,
it is.
And I really feel I'm really disappointed for all the wonderful artists out there that, like, they should have their own category. Like, art is its own thing. Graphic design and pieces and other stuff is its own thing. I'm sorry.
And honestly, sometimes it does blend together.
It does.
Well, there's a couple of examples here I would want to mention for that, but you're right. Like, why can't we have an award that's just like best artwork in a board game?
I mean, everything else, every other category.
I know, right? There's 15 freaking awards here. All right, so let's rattle these off. Castles of Burgundy Special Edition.
It's fine.
This is for presentation.
It's fine.
It's fine. Darwin's Journey.
It's fine.
It's fine. Deliverance. It's fine. Distilled.
It's okay. It's nice.
I don't even know if it's fine. It just is.
It is. Yeah, I'll give it an is instead of a fine. I agree with you on that.
Earth is, like, actively not great other than the cover.
Yeah.
I don't like the visual design
of it. It's also photos, so
yeah.
Like, I think you cheated there.
Yeah. The cover's great, though.
Yeah.
It's a pretty cover. Earthborn Rangers, I love.
Yeah.
It's so quirky and cool and evocative. That's a great one. Expeditions is just the Scythe artwork, but new pictures.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing artwork, but also, controversy aside, it's just like, it's the same thing. Forest Shuffle.
It's fine.
It's fine. Yeah. It's fine. And then we got Septima and Voidfall, the two from Mind Clash, who always does good in this category.
Man, Mind Clash is, they're just the best, man. I just,
yeah.
I say this a million times, like, I love that they swing for the fences. Like,
yeah, it makes for some amazing experiences. And for me, Voidfall is the example of where artwork and presentation go together.
Yes.
Because this game doesn't work if you don't have someone like Ian O'Toole working to make the graphic design accessible. It's the reason why all Acerta games are Ian O'Toole designed, because without that visual component, the game is very difficult to play.
Yes.
So. Voidfall for me, but also Earthborn Rangers is very good.
I own and have Septima, and honestly, a large part of picking up Septima was the artwork, and the, I mean, for lack of a better term, the presentation. I mean, the production is very good. The piece, I mean, if you flip through the production there, the artwork and the pieces and everything coming, it's pretty fantastic. But yeah, I haven't played Voidfall yet, but if you've ever played a 4X star game, like, yeah, you better bring in the big guns for that.
Yeah. Yeah. With worse artwork, that game would have been unplayable.
And there's a lot of games like that too, because when people are like, it's space, so like every color, and you're like, please don't. Or like,
no.
Everything's black, like, please don't.
Yeah. It's so hard to look at. Like, Eclipse First Edition. Impossible to look at. So yeah, I think for me, Voidfall, Earthborn Rangers is good, Septima's very pretty. There's some good stuff in there, but it is a weird mix.
Yeah. I think Septima, just for the fact that it convinced me to buy it.
Yeah. No, that's pretty good. All right. So next up, we have cooperative games, which historically is not a category we have much to say about, but we'll go through these. The Art Project, a new game from Benoit Turpin, working with Florian Siré. We have Deliverance again, so more angel fighting. We have the Daybreak, which is the climate change game from Matt Leacock that was on, I think, GameFound or BackerKit or one of those recently. Earthborn Rangers, we just talked about. Kinfire Chronicles, Night's Fall. Okay. It's a Kevin Wilson game. Kevin Wilson, of course, of Descent fame. This was crowdfunded, of course. Hence the four words in the title. Marvel Zombies, a Zombicide game. It's more Zombicide, but you got Marvel now. Sail, the two-player co-op we talked about. Sky Team, the other two-player co-op we talked about. Sleeping Gods, Distant Skies. So,
it's fine.
Standalone expansion for a game. Yeah. And then Unmatched Adventures, Tales to Amaze.
It's fine.
Where they made like an actual board game out of Unmatched.
I know. You know that game you own like 15 different expansions for? Hey, how about a board game of it? Like, damn it.
Why not? I'll be perfectly honest. I've not played a lot of these. For me, though, the one that really stands out is Daybreak. Despite the issues with shipping and some broken stuff in the box, the game is actually very interesting.
Sure.
And compelling. I wish it was shorter so I could bring it to class, but that's a me thing. Like, as a game and as a piece of communication, I think it does everything it's meaning to do. Following up with that, I love two-player co-op games, so Sail and Sky Team are both great.
Yeah, I agree as well. And again, I think if we want to stretch a little bit outside, you know, as far as the tabletop is concerned, like, Daybreak is an interesting idea as far as co-op, because it's something that we legitimately need to do cooperatively.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I guess you could somewhat say the same for Sky Team, but I don't think many of us are going to be in the cockpit of a plane, but we all need to be doing the Daybreak things. Like,
yeah, I mean, Leacock's whole thing is embodiment, right? Like, how do you embody a thing that you can relate to as a human being in the game? And Daybreak does that very well.
Yeah, and I just, you know, even with Sky Team, which is a great game, but like, if you don't know this, pilot and co-pilot actually do talk in the cockpit. So like,
yeah,
you know, it's, you wave your hand at that, it's fine, but I'm just saying.
All right, co-op games are good. All right, expansions, good year for expansions. Ark Nova Marine Worlds, Beyond the Sun, Leaders of the New Dawn, Botoku, Restoratorin, Cascadia Landmarks, Darwin's Journey, Fireland Expansion, Lost Ruins of Arnak, The Missing Expedition, Return to Dark Tower. I said Dark Tower. That's great. Let's get Kovalik on the mic.
There you go.
Return to Dark Tower, Covenant, Sea Salt and Paper, Extra Salt, Spirit Island, Nature Incarnate, and Tapestry, Fantasies and Future. Stupid subtitles. I've played half of these. I would say most of those are not essential. Marine World's not essential. Landmark's not essential. I love the Lost Ruins of Arnak expansion, but it's not essential to the game.
Sure.
Beyond the Sun, Leaders of the New Dawn would be up there for me if the two halves of the expansion could play together, but they don't. So, boo. So for me, it's probably Darwin's Journey, Fireland expansion. We've talked about this before. Yeah. It makes the game good.
It does.
Whether it's carved off the original game or not is a whole separate conversation, but it does make the game good. And then Spirit Island, I'm always down for more spirits. So Nature Incarnate, those are good spirits.
Yeah, that's fine. I agree.
All right. Innovative games. It's another dumb category that has no real definition.
Yeah, for what is a industry of innovation?
Right.
So it's like the innovative of the innovation. I don't know. It's fine.
It is fine. It's just sometimes the games that end up in here are not always innovative. They're just like big.
Sure. Or they're miniatures or something. Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, it's doing a lot of things. We're like, yeah, a lot of games do a lot of things.
I think the innovative category, because, again, this is a hobby of designer board games, so these are typically individual designers crafting something new and exciting, right? Otherwise, it never hits the table, right?
Right.
So this category should almost be like something they just award it to somebody, right? Like,
Yeah.
Oh, Pandemic Legacy. You just get this award because, like, as an industry, we go, what the heck? This is amazing. Like, right. Here's an award for you. Like, it's kind of weird to kind of go innovation. Like, all of the games are innovative, but sure.
Yeah. In some way. Yeah. Or they're derivative and they're not getting nominated for anything anyways.
Sure.
All right. So we got Apiary, which is a worker placement game with a few tweaks to it.
Uh-huh.
It's not derivative, but I wouldn't call it innovative either.
But it's got bees.
It's got bees.
The bees is the innovative.
It innovates by making the bees in space. Daybreak. I would say thematically innovative for sure. It found a way to make a climate change game that is accessible and cooperative that works, because that is had not existed before. So yes. Deliverance, again, people are really digging this Angel game. I don't know what's up with this thing, but there you go. Earthborn Rangers, very much so. It's a positive post-apocalyptic future, which is always fun.
Mm-hmm.
Far Away, I don't know much about this one, but it's got like a cool vibe to it, tableau ability type of thing. Hegemony, lead your class to victory. I think any game that's that asymmetrical is generally considered innovative, even though there's other games that are doing it. Mm-hmm. Kutno Hora, The City of Silver. I demoed this. I played half of it. I have it. I don't actually know what's innovative about this game. Sky Team, two-player co-op, communication barriers at some level, some higher level play that can go real time. So that I could see that. Station Fall. It's a Matt Eklund joint, which means it's complicated, more complicated than it needs to be. So I don't know if it's innovative or just like a big old box of stuff. Ticket to Ride Legacy, Legends of the West. It's a legacy game. It's I'm sure innovative for Ticket to Ride. And then Voidfall, same thing. Brilliant game. I wouldn't call it. It's not doing anything new. It's just doing a lot of things.
Sure.
So. I like all these games. I'm not saying any of them are bad. I just find like the whole innovative label like tricky.
Yeah.
So I'd say Hegemony or Daybreak for me.
Yeah, Hegemony, when I backed it, I mean, for two reasons. One was, hey, this game seems to be as profoundly crunchy and dynamic and like it wasn't, again, we took multiplayer solitaire. Like it was like you had to work off other people. Right. It was like, if I do this, this affects you doing this. This affects someone else doing this. Like it's that kind of really, it's that level of engagement. I think that was innovative. The asymmetric, sure. But it was that level of like the social classes, economic classes kind of interacting with each other was different. It wasn't like cause and effect. Mm-hmm. It was like just fluid. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's generally what kind of took me there as far as innovative, but
yeah, I think I'm with you. If I'm voting, which probably at some point I will,
yes.
I'm picking Hegemony.
Sure.
All right. So now we get into our weight classes. We got light, medium, and heavy games. Light games of the year. Not our particular wheelhouse, but there's a few in here we've played.
Yeah.
We have Art Society, from Mitch Wallace. We have Bonsai, which I've yet to play, but every time I see it, I'm like, God, that looks cool. Far Away, we just talked about, like a cool looking, funky artwork tableau builder. Gnar. Vikings.
Yeah.
Nemalia, which is panda on the cover, which is, it's polyomino tiles and pandas. Gotta love it. Point City, which we have played. We played that back at Gen Con. It's kind of like a slightly more complex version of Point Salad. Rebel Princess is another game I don't know a ton about, but is doing some interesting things with the cards there. That's Not a Hat is a party game.
It is.
So I don't know that I put it here, but there you go. Thunder Road Vendetta is, it's interesting it's under light,
because
I know
weird.
It's winning Game of the Year awards. And then Trailblazers. Chris just talked about last week on the podcast. It's kind of an interesting game about hiking.
Yeah. I don't know why a couple of games are here.
No. I think people, we talked about this before when we did the nominations, before the nominations came out. We all define medium, light, and heavy differently.
Sure.
And some people's definitions are weird.
But so. Don't, like, wouldn't we say that we're on the heavier side? Like,
yes.
So, yeah. I would never think of like, Point City as a light game. Like,
no, it's interesting. I don't, it's a 1.6, I guess.
That's weird. That's also weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. I mean, but, yeah, it's fine.
I don't know. That, I mean, that's my pick because that's the one I've played the most.
Yeah.
On this list. And I like it.
I'm going to go with Chris's pick on Trailblazers because it seemed like production wise, it was something you could bring anywhere. And it was Sprawlopolis like, where you're just kind of putting together a trail.
So. Yeah. Yeah, that is very cool. I want to play that. All right. Medium games. This is the bulk of what we play because this is the where all, most of the Euros fall.
Give or take.
That we have time to play, I guess. I have played all of these. I guess
I've played all of these too, yeah.
Apiary again. Well, Castles of Burgundy Special Edition, which doesn't feel like it should be medium, but the game is a medium game. It just has a $200 burden.
The weight is literally the weight of the game.
Yeah, the weight is the weight. Distilled, a game I thought was heavy until I played it, and I'm like, no, it's not. Yeah. Not at all. Earth, yeah. Expeditions, another game that's like a much bigger box and heavier production than what the weight of the game actually implies. Forest Shuffle, I feel like it's medium because it's long.
Yeah.
It's not a complicated
that's
game.
That's my experience of it.
Yeah. Sky Team, again. Ticket to Ride Legacy, Legends of the West. I haven't finished this. I played a couple rounds, but I'm like, they're going to add a lot to this to make it a medium weight game.
Yeah.
It's still just Ticket to Ride so far.
Sure.
White Castle, which is winning a bunch of other awards. And then World Wonders, which just doesn't have much going on for it, but I could see why it falls under medium.
I mean, the Castles of Burgundy Special Edition, and we've talked about this a little bit, where like games come back with new redesigns and stuff. Why is this here?
It's exactly the same gameplay, right?
It's 100% the same gameplay, right? Except the expansion.
There's one new expansion, and it's not very good.
But then put it in the expansion category. Why? Like,
uh-huh.
I mean, look. I mean, if we're going to put every game in here that has like an upgrade or a deluxe version of it, like this is going to come on silly really quickly.
Yeah. Not a fan.
I mean, again, it's one of the greatest games of all time, but I don't know.
It is, but it came out 14 years ago or whatever. Like, we're good.
You had your day, buddy.
I paid my $225. I have it. I'm not complaining. I just don't think it should win a Game of the Year award for 2023. In this category, for me, I think it's Apiary. I actively dislike some of these games, so sure. I wouldn't pick those, and the other ones are fine. So, like, there's two games in this list which I find funny that I gave dodges to and almost burned. But I know they're popular, so what are you gonna do?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, as far as categories are concerned, is medium, right? I mean, I feel like Sky Team is medium. I feel like that fits really well. I think some of the other games, like you said, is like some of them a little bit obtuse, like, or there's just like an endless deck of cards.
Right.
And you're just like, is that medium? I guess. It also could be light or also could be heavy, depending on like how much you want to torture yourself with the deck of cards.
Yeah, it becomes a question of like the best versus the most.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Like Earth isn't the best medium game. It's the most.
It's the most.
Game.
It's the most. It's the most mid of a game that it's ever midded.
Yeah, so people play it and they're like, "Wow, there's a lot of stuff going on here." I'm like, that doesn't mean it's good.
it's there.
Yeah. All right. So now here's our real wheelhouse.
This is These what are I'm the saying. Games we want. You were putting us up medium. No. I don't know who you are, man.
No, but the problem is, you look at the medium list, I'm like, I've played every one of these multiple times. Uh-huh. The heavy list, I want to play all of these, and I have not, because I don't have time.
Oh, well, that's a different story.
I know. It's sad. This is a sad one.
Wait, we'll get to the sad category in a minute.
Yeah. Of course, I own most of these, despite not playing them very much. Heavy game of the year. Okay. These are all good, so this is fun.
Yeah.
Age of Innovation. Terra Mystica 1.785, whatever you want to call it.
I love it.
Darwin's Journey, which I think we can just disqualify because it's not including the expansion, no. Right?
Yeah. It's not. I wouldn't even put it in the heavy category. I put it in the medium category.
Yeah, I could see that. Dune Imperium Uprising. I don't know. Like, Dune Imperium I wouldn't consider heavy, but I haven't played Uprising, so I don't know.
I would agree with. I mean, I think it's, again, we skew heavy, so.
True.
Sure, I guess. Maybe. Yeah. Possibly.
I was listening to a podcast the other day, a video game podcast, and the guy mentioned playing Dune Imperium on Steam, uh-huh. And the way he described it, he's like, this is the most complex, confusing, overwrought thing I've ever played in my entire life. And I loved it. Like, it was, that was his review. But he's like, it took like an hour to learn how to play just the basic. It was just funny listening to people who play video games and their walkthrough tutorials.
Yeah.
Like trying to figure out a board game. Sure. Being mad about it. Evacuation.
Yeah, that's heavy.
It is heavy. Uh-huh. It's not actually particularly complex, but it's really difficult to learn.
Yeah.
Great Western Trail, New Zealand.
Sure.
Hegemony, lead your class to victory. This is a heavy freaking
game. Yeah.
Kutnohora, the City of Silver.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty heavy game.
Too.
Nucleum, got a lot going on.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah, it's heavy and a lot.
Yeah. Scholars of the South Tigris is interesting.
Yeah, I thought the same.
Because, and I know, like, Shem Phillips games, they're getting more complex each one. Like, but I just think back to like Raiders or Architects. I'm like, these aren't heavy games, but apparently this one is.
I mean, it's a 4.01 as far as weight's concerned, which I think is really overestimated. It might just be that the people who play his games are like, what the heck, dude? Like,
it's a lot is what it is. Like, if you look at the player board, you look at the, like, there's a lot happening. And I think people conflate complexity with volume a lot of the time. Because volume makes it harder to learn.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying they're wrong, but. And then Voidfall, which is the heaviest game on this list because of volume.
In the rule book.
Yeah. Right. So this one probably just comes down to our actual games of the year, right? Like Voidfall for me, Hegemony for you.
Yeah.
Like that's where we ended at the end of the year. That's always what we end up picking as our heavy game, as game of the year. Good games.
Yeah, very good games.
All right, let's rattle off some party games that we've not played. All right, Among Cultists, a social deduction thriller. No, thank you. Blob Party. Okay. Chicken! Exclamation point. Dixit Disney Edition. That's my pick.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with that.
Hollywood 1947. How dare you? Nekojima.
Nekojima we played.
Oh, that's good. I actually like that one. Pray Another Day, but Pray with an E.
So
the same game, and once again, that's not a hat.
Should in the future, should they have like different levels of party game, light, medium, heavy?
What would a heavy party
game Nekojima be? Is not messing around.
That's true. Like, so physically heavy?
Well, physically heavy for sure, but I also think that it's one of those games that, like, if you brought that to a party, people, I mean, we were sweating that game, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that was no joke. Those damn cats.
I like that one. I like Dixit as a game, and Disney is cool.
So. Sure.
Good stuff. Print and Play. All right. This one's tough, again, because we just don't do print and plays, really. But we'll list them off.
Cause... I know one you do. I know one you backed. Same.
There are several here I've backed. I've not necessarily printed and played them. So. Ancient Realm is a button shy game. You can get a physical copy of that game. I find it iffy to put it under print and play, but there is an option to back it and just print it out and play it. So, Battle Card Series 1, Dungeon Pages Core Set, Flip Town, Naturopolis, same thing, button shy. One Page War is the one of these I did back that is a pure print and play from Haken Garter, who is the designer of. Like Moon and Villagers, very cool artwork layout, very cool system. I've read through the rules a couple of times. I just haven't gotten around to printing and figuring this out yet.
Makes sense.
Shoes Tactics, Tiny Mini Golf, which I've heard good things about. Villagers of the Oakdale and Waypoints. So, I personally have no picks because, again, the only ones of these I played are ones that I got copies from the publisher, which is not a printed play.
Sure. So. I mean, One Page War?
One Page War is great, and it seems good. I just haven't actually printed a copy that I could play with.
And it's literally one page.
Yeah.
But they do have, like, variations with the artwork, which is fun.
Right, yeah. I think the base version is, like, Modern War, but you could get the medieval version as well.
Or there's a kid version, too.
Is there a kid? Oh, I missed the kid version. All right, so print and play stuff, always good. Solo games. 20 Strong is like the modular solo game from Chip Theory Games. Siberian, the new Shadi Torbay game, the best one in like 10 years. Deliverance, those darn angels are back. Earth has a solo mode, can't argue with that. Earthborn Rangers, again, solo mode, can't argue with that. Halls of Hegra, have not heard of this game. It's a war game. We have Hoplomachus Victorum, a kind of re-release of an old Hoplomachus formula, one player only. Legacy of You, Shem Phillips' own one player only game. Mr. President, the American Presidency, a 6-hour GMT game that only plays with one. Voidfall has a pretty robust solo mode from David Turchi. And then Witchcraft, the Witchcraft version of Resist that came out this year. I love Voidfall. I think it's great, but that and Earth and Earthborn Rangers, I would just say let's disqualify the ones that actually have multiplayer modes.
Yeah, that's my biggest complaint with these.
Yeah, like if you ask me which of these I'd rather play the most, probably Voidfall, but it's also like the biggest lift because it's a lot and the solo rules are a lot. Siberian, though, is fantastic. And it technically has a two-player mode, but no one plays those games two players.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
All right, thematic game. Here's another weird category that's a nothing. Deliverance, Angels, Distilled, Whiskey, Dune Imperium Uprising, Dune, Earthborn Rangers, I don't know, Earthborn Rangers, I guess, Hegemony, Lead Your Class to Victory, Sky Team, Pilots, Station Fall, Space People, Thunder Road Vendetta, Mad Max, Voidfall, Space Stuff, and The Witcher Old World. The Witcher. So, thematically, what do you
That's
what do you
so weird, think? Thematically. Like, every game's thematic.
I know. It's anything that's not an abstract game goes in this category. It's Hegemony, right?
It's Hegemony.
That's such a thematic game. It doesn't work without the theme. Like, you could retheme some of these games and it'd be fine, but you couldn't retheme Hegemony. It doesn't work.
So, yeah, 100%.
All right. War Game, they nominated so many games, and I don't know why. There's like 15 games here. I'm just going to rattle them off. Bloodstones, The British Way, Counterinsurgency at the End of Empire, Downfall, Conquest of the Third Reich, General Orders, World War II, Halls of Hegra, The Hunt, North Africa 41, People Power, Insurgency in the Philippines, Plantagenet, Cousins War for England, Triumph of Marengo, Undaunted, Battle for Britain, and Weimar, The Fight for Democracy.
Yeah, buddy.
That Weimar game looks pretty cool. But
I can't wait to play that game.
I know, it's Matthias Kramer, it's four players only, apparently it takes 6 hours.
I don't care, I want to play it.
I know, me too, that's what I'm saying. We saw it at the convention. We're like, how do we get this game? And we're like, well, they have it, but it's four players only and it's $200. Like, boo.
I went through all the different tables at PAX and Anthony's like, well, what do you want to play? I'm like, this. I want to play this.
Like, we'll go find two more people because I don't know.
Two more people and somebody who can understand this rule set. But yeah, this is awesome.
And that's no shade on the other games. We're just war game people.
Absolutely, 100%. So, and again, there's a lot of great games here.
Yeah. All right. So the category that we've been talking about, it's here.
Wah wah.
Do we want to put ourselves through this?
I mean, let's just give a general statement. All our colleagues here for Best Podcasts are fantastic. We love them all.
They are.
And, you know, please show your love by, you know, giving votes. I know, like, typically the board game categories are like all the cool, fun stuff. But I will say, as a podcaster, it is very hard and a lot of work and effort and time and money to do these things, to do the podcast. So all of our colleagues out there who are doing these things and have been recognized by their listeners really do deserve the accolade here, because it is a heavy lift. So, I mean, we talked about light, medium, heavy. It's a heavy lift to do this stuff. So congratulations for everyone just being nominated. Fantastic. But yeah, check them out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like absolutely zero shade to anybody. Obviously, we would love to be nominated, but it's just cool to see. And a lot of these people are our friends. We know them. We spend time with them. And it's, you know, again, rattling them off real quick. Beyond Solitaire, Blue Peg, Pink Peg, Board Game Barbecue, Board Game Hot Takes, Decision Space, Five Games for Doomsday, Friendly Ties, Game Brain, The Gamecasters, One Stop Co-op Shop, Talk Cardboard. We know many of these people. We've spent time with them. We've hung out with them. It's very cool to see them nominated. So
yes.
Vote for the one you like best. I don't know that I could pick just one.
There you go.
All right. Last but not least, always the oddball out, best board game app.
So it's like, and yeah, you're still here, right?
Right. And honestly, this is often where I find out that things have been released digitally, because I'm like, I didn't know these things don't get promoted very much anymore. And I feel like we've stopped investing in board game apps as much.
We did. It was like such a big thing for a moment.
Yeah, well, Board Game Arena came around, and that's where everybody puts their stuff.
Yes.
So now, like, this list is not great. So
board game apps generally have not been good through the history.
There was a period of, like, 3 to 4 years where we got a lot of really good stuff.
They got better, and they are better today, but generally in comparison to, like, literally every other kind of app out there or video game, you know?
It's weird, though, like, Dune Imperium's not here.
Maybe, I thought the same thing.
Did it go 1.0 after January? Is that what happened? Because that's the best one from last year, but it's not here.
It is.
I guess I'll rattle these off. Capital Lux 2, Discordia, Fantasy Realms, Fleet the Dice Game, Munchkin Digital, Numsters, Power Grid Board Game, Super Mega Lucky Box, Twilight Struggle Red Sea, and Unmatched Digital Edition. I got nothing. I don't like, I think Fleet the Dice Game is a great game. The app is fine. I don't know that I'd play it on the app. Fantasy Realms, a great game. Again, another app where I'm like, why would I play this in an app? Munchkin Digital, famously not good.
Yeah.
Power Grid board game app for iOS, also famously not very good. So an Unmatched Digital is like $4,000 or whatever. Like,
yeah.
So I don't know. I have no picks here personally.
Yeah. I think since we praised everything before, we would just go, to this afterwards. We're just like, good luck next year, everybody. Good luck next year.
Yeah. So there you go, folks, all the categories, all the nominees, get your votes in. They are accepting votes until May 12th, which is Sunday, Mother's Day. Don't forget your moms. And don't forget your Board Game Geek Award nominations.
There you go. All right, everyone. So that's everything for this week. Until next time, this is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And we'll save you all a seat at the table. Take care, everyone.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.